My name is Lainey Zuber, and you're listening to another interview from my project, 2020 Summer Stories. This interview features Ian Mundy. He spent his summer in Seattle, Washington, and then traveled to Duluth, Minnesota. We discuss these travels and his experience working for City Year during a pandemic.
My name is Ian Mundy. I'm 24. And then I spent the summer between kind of like Seattle, on the road, and then Minnesota. Yeah, I guess to start with, it was a pretty turbulent time for me. So for starting in May, I came back to Seattle in like late April, I guess, from being home due to COVID. Seattle was kind of like a hotspot, so I left. I went home. I was home for like a month and a half, and then I went back to Seattle to kind of finish out my term of service with City Year. So I was kind of like in Seattle for a while, mostly just hanging out, doing online work for City Year, which is kind of weird. Had like a lot of good relationships with the kids that I was working with in the school there. And then it was like online, and it was kind of weird, like not really seeing them at all. So it was pretty strange work, but not a lot of it, which was the benefit. So I had like, I think we were required to do like 8 hours a week between helping our partner teacher, different trainings, that kind of stuff. So I had a lot of free time. So I just like wake up a lot of the times and just like read and drink coffee for a while. It was actually pretty lovely. And May and like June in Seattle are really, really beautiful months there. It's just like the foliage. There's like Seattle, I did not realize was so green. There's just like a lot of really pretty flowers. So yeah, it was kind of nice. It's very pretty relaxing time. But I think like through a lot of it, there was also this kind of impending doom a little bit, because I was getting ready to move to Minnesota to start my job that I currently work with the EPA. So that was also, it was like kind of this like very, I guess in retrospect, it was a very like conflicted time, because it was kind of, in one sense, very relaxing, not a lot of work, not very stressful in that sense, but also very stressful because I was trying to figure out if I even, for the first part of, you know, if we're starting May 15th, like for the first part of the summer, I was kind of trying to figure out if I even wanted to move to Minnesota, and if I would even take that job, and definitely contemplated like, just like not, just like packing my car up and driving home, some sort of dramatic thing. So that was tough. I was also in a pretty close romantic relationship at the time. And so then I was like getting ready to end that relationship when I would leave, which just sucks. Like having like an expiration date on your relationship is like, it's like the worst. That was pretty rough. But yeah, June, going into June was really nice. I got some good hikes in. Yeah, it was really warm, which I think now I think about more, because Minnesota is pretty cold. Duluth in particular is really cold. So I think about Seattle as like, in my mind, it sticks out as like a particularly warm place, even though I don't know if that's totally true or fair. Anyhow, June 30th was when my lease was up and I moved. So that morning I like packed all my stuff up and had like a very sad kind of emotional goodbye with my then girlfriend. So that was pretty rough. And then, yeah, that was a pretty weird morning, actually, because then I also went and like got coffee with the janitor at my school, who's like super nice. And so I had just been like crying a lot and like really sad and tired. And then I was like, all right, I guess like I said, I would get coffee with him before I left. Honestly, he kind of brightened my whole day up a little bit. He's like a really funny guy. His advice was that I should, upon moving back to Seattle, whenever I did eventually, I should buy a weed plant and start farming weed. So maybe that's in my future someday. And then I was on the road for a while, for about 2 weeks, I guess. I drove down from Seattle through Oregon, stopped at Crater Lake, drove over to the California coast and saw the redwoods. And then I drove down to like Lassen Volcanic Park. Being on the road alone was kind of a weird experience, just like kind of every day, like waking up in a tent alone, you get in the car, put on a podcast. I talk to myself a lot in the car, which I talk to myself a lot anyhow, so wasn't really that weird. I wasn't going that crazy, but I got really angry at my phone GPS a few times. Developed kind of a fun rapport with Siri. And then I did have kind of a weird night. The one night from that like really sticks out was my car kind of broke down. I was leaking transmission fluid for a while. And so like every time I stopped, there'd be this little puddle like under my car where the transmission fluid was coming out. And also the coolant. So I had to like keep refilling it. And then eventually I got to Carson City, like after crossing the Sierra Nevada, and I was like, oh, I was talking to my dad, and he was like, yeah, you should just bring that to a mechanic, like get it looked at. Because the next day I was gonna drive across Nevada and there's just like nothing there for so long. And so, not a great place to break down. And so I brought it in and they had to fix it. And so I had to just like spend the night there in Carson City, just like this random night in Carson City. And it just felt so weird. It was like this weird kind of, I don't know, almost like an out of body, out of narrative experience. Just like, because I had to get my stuff out of the car and I had my little backpack on and I was just like wandering through Carson City. And then I eventually Ubered up to this state park and spent the night there. So that was kind of weird, just being like, all right, I guess I'm just here, Carson City. And then I finished the drive. I went through Utah and Colorado, and then I spent maybe like a week in Ohio with Bronwyn. So that was really nice, like at the end of the trip, after like a lot of turbulence, to like see familiar faces and like hang out there. So that was really good. Yeah, I got to hang out with Bronwyn's family a lot. They're really great. So love them, kind of second family. So that was nice. And then I drove up here. And then I've been in Minnesota since then. It's been all right. I think it's been a time of like, it's been difficult, definitely. I mean, I won't sugarcoat it. It's like a pretty weird time to like move to a new city. There's just a lot of change at once. Like, I always kind of was thinking about it, like starting a new job is kind of stressful and weird. Moving is kind of stressful and weird. Breaking up with like a long-term relationship is kind of weird, and then doing all of that together like during a pandemic, and it's just, I think in many ways it's been hard to kind of see the potential in Duluth, because people are always like, oh yeah, Duluth has like a really great live music scene, and like, oh yeah, there's like all these cool running events and they're all canceled this year. I'm just like, oh cool, we'll see, I don't know. So it's been kind of difficult to meet people for sure. I think like the first month for sure was like a lot of, there were like days when my roommates weren't around where I just like didn't really talk to like a person during the day, because I was just working from home a lot, reading papers mostly, kind of busy work, just waiting for a lab to open up and we could go in. So that was really slow. I think a turning point was I started like meeting up with one of my coworkers to discuss papers that we had read. And that was just really great, kind of to have like a contact, a friend, kind of like, oh yeah, like I work with people and they're like, all right, kind of cool people. There's like, yeah, community there. So that was good. And then I've also just kind of gotten out and about a little more, met some folks kind of like at different things, like volunteering for trail work, that kind of stuff. So it's been like upward trajectory since then. And then now I think the two big things are like I run a lot and I bake a lot. That's probably like what I do now for the most part. I think that's kind of like what I've done to stave off like crippling depression. Like I really, yeah, I have done, I was kind of like running a fair bit, and then I signed up for a 50K race that happened like maybe 3 weeks ago. And then like last weekend I did another long kind of 50K run. And yeah, I don't know when I'll stop. I think I just need to run in order to be okay right now. And I think that's all right. Something to break down with my therapist, I guess. Which, I don't know, there's a lot of things to break down with my therapist. Add it to the list. Yeah, and then I think it's also been, I think in general, like being in Seattle and also being here, like maybe it's a larger post-grad theme, but I think it's become more in focus since being in Duluth, and kind of like a lot of transition, and kind of like a difficult transition has been just like being more aware of like my own mental health and things around that. So that's also been kind of a reckoning for my summer. That's kind of how my summer went for the most part.
I wanted to start at the beginning of Ian's story and have him walk me through what City Year was like for him.
Yeah, City Year was dope. I loved City Year. I really wasn't sure what kind of experience I was going to have, because I've never lived in like a big city, and I also don't really have an interest in teaching or like education, and I didn't realize that like the crowd there was going to skew that much towards like education folks, which makes sense in retrospect. I'm like, yeah, of course. But so yeah, it was pretty interesting. I think like I didn't think I was going to really enjoy working with the kids as much as I did. I miss it a lot now, especially because I have a job where I don't, it's not like a teaching job. It doesn't involve like as much human interaction. It's like science. It's kind of colder, maybe a little more sterile. And so, yeah, I miss that aspect of it. And just having, I think the kids have like a lot of curiosity and just energy and like passion for life. That's really just energizing, even though obviously they can be like exhausting little brats sometimes. But then I think like on a broader level, like City Year as an organization is also really cool. And City Year Seattle was really dope. There's kind of City Year Seattle is kind of like leading City Year in terms of like declaring themselves like an explicit, like youth-centered, anti-racist organization. And so there's like a lot of focus on race and equity in education. And Seattle Public Schools is actually like a very segregated school district. And it's kind of easy for people to ignore because Seattle has this reputation as being this kind of like fancy Amazon white city. And it's really just because like a lot of people have been like marginalized and just pushed out of like the kind of ritzy areas. And so that was really interesting. I think having like an understanding from classes in college of like, oh, like institutional racism and like structural racism, like this is what it looks like. And then I think it was just cool to see and kind of eye-opening to then be at an organization where like people were kind of like actually doing the work. And so there's just like a lot of really inspiring community leaders and some people, like both people outside of City who like came in and talked to us at like race and equity summits, which were like these like monthly meetings we had to like just talk about different themes around like race and equity. And then also people within City Year who are just like really cool, just like very inspiring people. And so I think that has kind of changed maybe a little bit of my perspective on like life and career a little bit. And I think it also is, it makes it difficult in some ways to transition to working in a lab because then it's very devoid of like that focus, and science in particular is like pretty apolitical, and there's kind of a reluctance to like to engage in that kind of dialogue and that kind of work even internally within the EPA. So yeah.
My next question for Ian was on the topic of his travels. I wanted to know, did he have much COVID anxiety during his trip?
Not too much.
That's good.
Yeah, not too bad. I stopped like for gas and groceries occasionally, and then otherwise I was kind of just on my own. So no, not too bad. I think much less than I did like fly home to Seattle and back I guess outside of the time frame, but like before, that's like when I came back to Seattle like late April, like, right before summer. Yeah, that was more, I think, than this, than the drive. I thought the drive was pretty chill. Yeah. Some of it was kind of messy. I was like, well, I'm not gonna like. I did zero planning.
I then followed up this question by clarifying if he was just camping.
So I was Forest Service camping, like just trying to take my car, drive out into the National Forest, and just pull off somewhere and set up a tent. Because like, that's my understanding is like that's legal in any national forest. So I was just doing that. There were a couple really late nights of trying to find a spot to camp. One night in Colorado in particular, I like got down from hiking and I really wanted to hike a 14er. I was like, yeah, I want to like get up and see the Rockies. Like I've never really hiked in Colorado. And so I got to where I was gonna like spend the night in Colorado late. And so I didn't start hiking until like 7. I didn't get down until like 11. And then I was like trying to find a spot to sleep until like I went to bed at like 2 in the morning. Like it was a dark times. So it wasn't smooth across the board, but I did camp kind of just wherever.
Then I wanted to hear if he had any interesting encounters with people along the way.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. There was one guy I remember at Crater Lake, and he was like, I was got down from hiking and he saw my license plate and he kind of came over and chatted. I forget his name. He was nice. I think he was from South Carolina because he was like, oh yeah, like East Coast license plate. Nice. And I was like, oh hell yeah,
Yeah.
and he had done a really cool, he was doing like this insane road trip. He was driving like, I think he drove through Colorado and then like down from like South Carolina, like, and then like down through like Joshua Tree and then was going like up the West Coast and then was going to go across through like Glacier National Park in Montana. And then like
Whoa.
he was kind of just doing like this horseshoe like around the country.
Wow.
And yeah, he was on an epic road trip. He was after it. So that was pretty cool to talk to that guy. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Oh, there was one other guy that sticks out. I was hiking down in Colorado. I was like hiking down off the mountain, and I saw the same person who I had. He had been coming down when I was going up, and then when I was going down, he was going back up again. And I was like, "Oh, you're going back up?" And he was like, "Yeah, it's like this birthday challenge I'm doing." And then he just kind of like motored off, and I was like, "Whoa, what's this?" I just ever since then I've kind of been curious.
What's the
What's the
challenge?
birthday challenge? Yeah,
Yeah.
like I don't know, because there's like a very tall mountain there. Maybe he was just doing it like a dozen times because he was 24 or something like that. I don't know. I'm just always been curious what he was after. And it just seems I was also kind of just like, man, I want to hike with this guy. It seems
Yeah.
cool. Who's
And
out here at like midnight on their
locked
birthday
in.
doing some sort of birthday challenge?
Whoa. I mentioned that a lot of people might be jealous that he got to travel during a pandemic when so many folks were stuck at home.
Yeah, I think I mean, at the best of times, I would kind of think to myself, like, this is the life, what I was born to do. Because there
Yeah.
is a very liberating element of it where you're just waking up and you're just, oh, okay, where am I going to drive today? What beautiful thing am I going to see today? And the landscape just keeps changing as you kind of move down the coast and you cross mountain ranges. And so, yeah, that was really nice. I think it was, in some respects, kind of a nice escape from, thinking about Seattle and like what I was leaving behind there. And I think that was, I don't, I guess I would like healing is maybe like a strong word, but it was like there was a kind of an element where it was definitely what I needed. And I think it was also just kind of a fun confidence booster, I guess, to do it alone, even though there were times when I was definitely, it's like, oh, I'm just like tired and lonely. But yeah, I think it was kind of cool to do it all alone and just drive.
I wanted to know why, out of all the hobbies he could have chosen, baking brought him the most enjoyment.
I have actually thought about this a little bit. Yeah. There's a lot of elements of it. I think the first is that baking has been something that's been kind of building in my life for like kind of since I graduated. I think like I didn't really cook for myself a whole lot when I was in school, and I certainly didn't really bake. And I kind of just had this image always of baking as really difficult and time consuming. Like, oh, if you want to make your own bread, you can, but that's just so hard. And then I come to find out it's really easy and it actually makes delicious food. So I think that's been kind of one part of it is just like discovering food preparation generally, whether it's like baking or pickling things, making different like spreads, and just kind of like the endless possibilities and that aspect of it. I think there's another side of it, which is I love the chemistry of it. And I think it really kind of speaks to me in some way there. I love baking in particular. I love like the activity of leavening and the activity of yeast and fermentation. Or if you're making a cake, there's the baking soda and this. I think, and I have actually thought about this because I think, in chemistry you do reactions and you kind of like work with chemicals and reagents and all this stuff. And you never really see them. You don't see like the reaction happening. You just like every, especially in organic chemistry, like everything you make is just like this white powder. It's all super boring. And I think baking is this opportunity to kind of like, it's a little bit more, it's more tactile. You're working with it. You're kneading the bread. You're using your hands more and you're seeing those changes. And you can like feel the changes. Like I know chemically that like gluten is developing because water is like interacting with these, gluten and gliadin, like these two subunits. But then I can like look at the molecules and be like, oh, great. But then it's different. And you can really feel the gluten develop. Like you can feel the gluten is relaxed. And I think that kind of is just like this way to interact with chemistry. It's almost just like a different way to interact with chemistry. I remember in undergrad when I was on like a search committee for an organic chemistry faculty member, we would always ask kind of like, what do you like to do in your free time? And they, all three of them mentioned like the Great British Bake Off. they all watched it. And I think if there's something maybe about baking that speaks to chemists
Yeah.
in some way, maybe they're also just like coming out of postdocs and PhDs that are really stressed. Maybe it's biased in that way too. Yeah, I think there's something there. And then I think the final element of it that I guess that I've thought about is I'm not very good at like drawing, I guess. Like I don't have like a natural eye for it. Not to say that I can't like work at it and get better, but like I guess the conventional arts like drawing, watercolors, painting, ceramics are I'm not I don't possess much ability in those, and so at least inherently. And so it's very difficult, I think, because I'll have like a vision artistically for what I want to create, but I can't translate it into what I want. Like I can't make my hand draw the line on the paper the way I want it to. And I think with baking, I do have that. Like I feel like I can translate like a vision for like, oh, it would be so cool to make this bread with these spices in it, and I can translate that into the bread that I want. And so I think there's an element of kind of like creative agency to it that's feels very empowering and is an outlet of creativity. So I think that I think like after now that I'm kind of especially in like a job that's maybe I don't know like has less kind of human interaction is kind of a little bit more static and more kind of like focused, I've really thought more about kind of the importance of like creating. And I think it's just like a basically like a requisite for like living. Like I don't think you can be alive. It's like breathing and like drinking water. Like you either create or you like slowly wither away and die. That's kind of I think baking is maybe just something that during a time in my life when I've really needed to not wither away and die, like I maybe am slowly withering away and dying in other aspects of my life. It's something to kind of latch on to.
At this point, I asked a question I ask in most of my interviews. What media was he consuming over the course of the summer?
I think I mean, for news, a decent bit from Twitter, I guess. I also follow, I guess I get like articles from Jacobin via Facebook. So, yeah, a lot of stuff like that. And then, yeah, I think sometimes it's like for news, it's like I'll like read something on Twitter and then I'll be like, is that real? And then I'll like look it up. So, yeah, I don't know if I have like the most reliable news sources there, you know,
No.
as far as news consumption. But yeah, that's kind of, I think, a decent bit of Twitter time just because it's so easy, like working from home and then being on these like mind-numbing training calls to get hours, just bust out the phone and like, oh, okay, you know, what's going on? For books and movies and stuff, I guess, like, do you want to just kind of, I'll just
Yeah,
go, yeah.
please, yeah.
For books, I got a couple books I was like pretty into that one of which I really need to finish. I was reading The Open Veins of Latin America by Eduardo Galeano, which was just like, yeah, I've been meaning to like read more about Latin American history generally for a long time. There's also this memoir by Primo Levi, who's like a chemist, and it's called The Periodic Table. It's like about kind of his life in relationship to chemistry. So I was definitely, I think I missed that period too, like when I was in Seattle in particular, because I had more opportunity to read kind of just very, a lot of time on my
Yeah.
hands. Yeah. And then TV show, movie wise, a lot of Great British Bake Off. I've like watched it and then I started like rewatching it. I just really like it. I don't know. It's so pleasant. It's so nice. I did watch a decent number of movies too. There was about a week where I like just kind of was pretty sad and like watched like a movie every day. But there are some good movies sprinkled in there. Yeah, the one that has like really stuck with me after the fact was this movie by Soviet filmmaker Andrei Tarkovsky, and he made it like while he was dying of cancer. And it's called The Sacrifice, and it's kind of like this meditation on like life. And I don't know, yeah, that one has really stuck with me for whatever reason. I think maybe in relation to like climate change, it's kind of about like a nuclear apocalypse. And so I kind of reconceptualize it in my mind around like present annihilation.
I changed topics once again to ask if he was aware of the Black Lives Matter uprising in Seattle and what that looked like from his perspective.
Yeah, I guess I kind of forgot to mention all that. Yeah, I almost forgot when that was. It feels like that was earlier, but no, I guess that was no, it was interesting to be there. I think I'm really glad that I was in Seattle when things were happening. I remember like the first weekend that there were protests, kind of just going out. It was less organized, kind of more frenzied people just like in the streets. And so I was kind of just there to like take it in, bear witness, like watch. And then that kind of coalesced around like these protests outside of this police precinct in Capitol Hill. And so there was about a solid week where it was like every night I would just be like, all right, I guess I'm just like going out to the protests over there tonight. And I would just kind of drive up to Capitol Hill and park and go walk down and join the protest for the evening. And I think that was definitely, it was kind of eye-opening. Yeah, like it's different. It was different than watching it on TV for sure. Like I think it kind of changed the way I feel in that, not in that like I've always kind of like hated police. Like I'm not, I'm like, yeah, like let's, abolish cops, right? Like it didn't change my political beliefs, I guess, but it definitely kind of changed the way I am willing to like engage in dialogue with others about it. Like I think when my parents, for instance, maybe they're like, or like my dad in particular, would be like, well, we gotta have them though, and I'll kind of be like, no, we don't. Like I've seen, like I don't know, like you do realize that like that could be like you're, when you're watching those images on TV of people getting like shot with rubber bullets and tear gas, like that could be one of your kids out at a protest, like getting maced in the face. Like no, like I don't know, just like yeah, like that is not, there's not room for like equivocation and kind of this oh, I don't know, like I don't know, what are you gonna do? Like no, I'm fully over that. Yeah, I definitely went off to my parents a couple times about it. And they're like supportive. They kind of nod. Oh yeah, And they're more or less feel the same. Like they're not that far from where I, like me and my siblings are, but they're like still not quite there. And so yeah, I think it's kind of changed my perspective on it in that way. And kind of the way, people say like, oh, it's like a standing army, like we have like this domestic army in our own nation. And then being like at like a protest and seeing like these like lines and lines of like cops all with like gas masks and batons and like just like riot gear, like, and the National Guard is like behind them, and you're like, oh, it really is like that. It really, like, it looks like an army. It feels like you're squaring off against an army. Really just like solidified, I think, a lot of that in my mind. And I know people talk about like, oh, like I was young once and now I have different politics. And that, I don't think that'll happen to me anyhow. I hope not. But that will definitely never change. Like I think my views on police are like locked in. Yeah, it was good to be there. And I think it was also hard because that was like as I was contemplating leaving Seattle. And being a part of the protests also kind of made me feel a lot more connected to Seattle as a city and as a place, and like kind of as a community. And so that was also kind of a difficult aspect of it. And then after about a week, the police abandoned the precinct that they, it was like on the, on 12th Street or 12th Ave. They abandoned it and it became, people like texted me about it a couple times. It became like Chaz. Which is like the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. And so that kind of like the protests, there really weren't like that many after that. Like there would be a kind of like sporadic, like organized rally event, more like official thing. But it wasn't like this like nightly thing, I guess, in the same way, because the police presence wasn't there to like square off against. And it actually was pretty cool. Chaz turned into like this. It's hard to describe. I mean, there's like very, felt like a very free space. There's a lot of like graffiti and kind of like free artistic expression, which was pretty neat. And a lot of like people just supporting each other. Like there was a lot of food donations and people with medical experience signed up for like street medic shifts and that kind of stuff. And it became kind of a safe place for people experiencing homelessness to go and spend the night. And so then they also like tore up a big portion of this nearby park and planted like a lot of crops. Like this community garden just like cropped up. Like this massive community garden just kind of like came into being overnight. That was pretty cool. And ultimately, I think the organizers kind of ended up abandoning it. Like it kind of fizzled after some time. And I also did feel conflicted. Like, I didn't go there as much. I didn't feel like that comfortable sometimes going there because it had kind of a bit of a party vibe. Like, it felt like, oh yeah, like we did it. Like, and there's just, you know, it's Seattle still, and it's also in Capitol Hill, which is like a very white, pretty affluent area of the city, like kind of where a lot of the young, wealthier folks live. And so the demographic skewed pretty white. And so even though it was like a space that was organized by people of color, it definitely still felt a little strange and almost like self-congratulatory to be walking around with a lot of other white people. And you know, I don't know, kind of this feeling of like, well, I don't, this is like one precinct that they abandoned. There's like still feels like there's a lot of work to be done. And also just like, you know, work to do on yourself, like decolonizing your own mind and that kind of self-work. So yeah, I felt kind of conflicted about it after that.
I finished by asking if the wildfires that occurred on the West Coast had any impact on him as someone who formerly lived there.
Yeah, I guess I was here. We did get some smoke from it a little bit. So we got like kind of this haze a little bit. Not too bad though, I guess. I mean, not obviously not compared to elsewhere. No, it was a little weird because I still like, you know, I know some people now in Seattle. Just seeing, yeah, the images. Yeah, I mean, obviously I didn't feel super great. There was a part of me that I was kind of like, well, if we're gonna have climate change, at least that's kind of a cool aesthetic. Like, it looks cool, at least, you know, kind of the Blade Runner vibes. I was like, at least it looks good. Pretty depressing though, for sure, to see that. And I mean, I guess it's one of those things too that retrospectively is maybe something you don't really comprehend until it's like at your doorstep or, you know, in your country. Because I know, I forget when, maybe like last, like the summer before or 2 years before, like the Amazon rainforest burned. I'm sure it was like, I mean, the Amazon, everything is like bigger there. So I'm sure whatever the scale was in the United States for our forest fires, it was like 10 times worse down there. And that kind of made like limited splash. So there's also maybe an element of kind of, yeah, hypocrisy to be like, oh my God, oh no, climate change. And it's like, well, I guess it's been happening. Australia was burning really badly too. But yeah, it definitely, I mean, I think it definitely fuels my kind of climate existentialism that I go down a fair bit. Yeah. I mean, I think it's just like, it's like the dominant like issue for it, or it will be for, you know, like a few hundred years probably. Be like every generation will kind of conceptualize themselves in relation to climate change. I don't know. I remember reading there's like an article about COVID, and I was talking about how like COVID kind of signals the end of like the 9/11 era, because this is like kind of now like the new like thing, like this like watershed moment or watermark in like history. But I think like climate change will probably dwarf all of that.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to check out more stories at worcesterdigital.org/2020summerstories.